Thank you for inviting me. And I love this class, and I actually wish to come and see you guys all. Today we will be talking about the divorce. So what comes to mind when you hear the word divorce? Marriage. That's very interesting. Okay, what else?
Why?
You're married
like a week.
I don't think she's the only one who gets married for almost all of the other group.
Well, like,
they all do that, right?
Kind of
what else? Problems. What else?
Against the faith.
Against the faith.
Yeah.
Very good.
Haram.
What did you say? We're going to start. And if you guys keep talking, I can't focus. And if I lose my focus, I can just show you the slide and leave. So if you have a question, feel free to raise your hand. I'll let you ask your question. If you have just an idea, if something came to mind, something you want to share, feel free to do so. But just raise your hand. Don't just jump in. Okay. All right. So these are the topics we're going to be talking about today: marriage in the Bible. We're going to just fly over this one. Then we're going to go to some statistics, reasons for divorce, effects of divorce, and then the most important of this all is what can you do. The reason we're taking this, I think, is because later on you're going to face children from broken homes. Divorce, separation, it's similar, yeah. Alright. So this about marriage in the Bible, all the way back in Genesis 2. The one I have in big letters is the one, the verse I want to focus on. I will make him a helper comparable to him. That's when God wanted to make Eve, right? I just wanted to see what's coming, but that's okay. All right, is this better? Okay. So, God made from the beginning a man and a woman. Because I know last week we talked about homosexuality, so that touches that same issue. God never intended for two women to be married or two men to be married. God made them from the very beginning, one man and one woman. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. God told them that before they fell in sin. God made the family with the intention of it to grow and have children. And then in Matthew, the Bible tells us they are no longer two, but one. So God in the secret of matrimony, God makes them into matrimony's marriage, makes them into one, right? In Ephesians, the Bible asks the wives to submit to the husbands and the husbands to love their wives as their own bodies. The Bible, from the time of St. Paul, Rabbina, what he wants from each one in the unity. God wants the wife to submit and for the husband to give love. Because he knows that this is going to be, if it is not that way, it's going to create problems later on. Maybe you have the slides on the website, so they don't need to really copyright.
Sometimes they have to.
Okay, never mind then. In the book of Malachi it says, for what reason? Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth. It says here that the Lord did not accept the prayer of someone, or did not receive the sacrifice from someone. Why? It gives us the reason. Because the husband here was not treating his wife the right way. And verse 16, if you look, it says, for the Lord God of Israel says that he does what? Hates divorce. Very few times in the Bible that you would read the word God hates. Very, very few. And that's one of them. Ma'am, what's the definition of divorce? Action or an instance of legally doing what? Dissolving marriage. It was surprising to me that it wasn't separating, it wasn't splitting. If you have to do this, you have to dissolve. It's like, if you think about it, it's like something that's really connected and you have to just like make it in a liquid, dissolve it. So that's the only way you can actually separate the two. When is divorce allowed in the church? Only two reasons. Anyone?
Sexual immorality.
Sexual immorality, very good. What else?
If one of them will hire something before the marriage?
No.
I think that's true, though. If you ask the person you're trying to talk to, like if they're a virgin or not, and then after marriage,
We have two reasons that you can go to the church, and the church will give you a permission to marry a second time. Only two.
If you can't have a baby.
No. Very good. That's it. These are the two reasons. If someone cheated, and if someone changed the faith. That's it. So if there's a third.
I don't know. I heard from other women different things. I heard like if the woman knows that she can't have babies before marriage and doesn't tell her husband, and then when they get married and he finds out that you have need, that's like means for you to get divorced. And same thing with the virgin issue. That's what I heard from my daughter.
I don't know. These are the two that I know about.
They do that under the permission of Magma Mukaddas bishops in Egypt. Mm. They have to give proofs that she knew these things before marriage, or she lost the virginity before marriage and she never told anyone, even her future husband. Then Magma Mukaddas look at it and then decide yes or no. But there is new stuff coming from Magma Mukaddas, but she was talking about written in the Bible.
Yeah, the ones that we know of are these two main ones. Cheating and someone changing their faith. One of the two.
That might be a type.
Okay, so the first one is adultery, because from the beginning it was not. When Moses gave them the permission to divorce their wives, that was for the hardness of their hearts, but it was not from the beginning. It wasn't so. God didn't intend for a family to be broken by divorce, except for sexual immorality, as you can see here. Now, number two is change of faith, as it says in 1 Corinthians, if an unbeliever departs, let him depart, and then the brother or the sister is not under bondage in such a case. So he can get remarried in that case, after, of course, permission from the church. Now, let's look at the statistics. For a couple marrying today, the lifetime probability of divorce or separation 40% and 50%. So out of every two marriages, one of them will end up in divorce or separation. I think it's coming that this rate is not only in the out-of-church communities, but unfortunately it's becoming higher in our church community as well. It wasn't like that very long time ago, but now it is. We'll know why. Now, the percentage is significantly lower for those who marry after the age of 21, graduate, college, and religiously committed. So that can tell us that person before 21 making decisions that early or trying to marry to their sweetheart or whatever it is, these really don't last long. The person of course matures over time and they are able to make their decisions, especially when it comes to something like more than 1 million children a year experience their parents' divorce. And a recent survey reported that divorce, as I said, among Christians is now the same or sometimes higher than the broader culture.
I have a question.
Sure.
We're talking about Christians in general, not
yes.
just...
in general. In general, but it's also growing in the Coptic Church, unfortunately. My personal opinion on this, I think it's because we are getting to try to become like everybody else, like in everything else. For example, the way we dress, the words we use, places we go to. Some people try to stick to the identity of a good Christian. Some people lose it over time. When you lose your identity, you start to look at everyone else, what they're doing, and just want to do like everybody else. Divorce is one of them. Well, people at work or people in school or college or wherever they are, everyone's getting divorced, so why not? So that's what happened. That's why from the very beginning or later when you become Sunday school teachers, you want to let your kids know that they are different, they have to be different. Once they start to be like everybody else, then there's something wrong. Then they're losing their identity, and then we will face problems like this.
I'm sorry, but coming back to the stress that you need to take on yourself or something like that, the Corinthians, from 12 to 16, I was reading already, it says at the end of it, how do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband, or how do you know whether you will save your wife?
Yes. At that time, they were talking about when they were getting, when they're marrying somebody not from the faith. They say, oh, I will make him convert. Oh, he will get baptized and he will be just fine. We see a lot of families now in the church that are married from an uncaught person, but and they will stay, they will remain married for a long time, but on the other hand, some of them won't stay married, so it's the same. But again, they're talking about that part. Married from outside of the faith. And the person converting just to get married.
Okay.
So.
What's the difference between divorce and separation?
Divorce, you're legally divorced, so she gets the half, like he said. But separation, everyone is living in different homes. The kids with this one for some time. It's just they do it like without the courts, but they still married on papers.
So this statistics of separation?
That one.
It's unofficial.
Yes, but it's like it's talking about both. I believe the damage is the same because kids growing up, as long as the parents are living in the same house, it's the same problem, as we're gonna see later. Um, 50% of the children of divorce show signs of psychological trauma. Boys become aggressive, girls become depressed, and both have higher potential for drug use. We see it a lot in psychiatric patients, that they will come and say, oh, I don't know who my father is, I've never met him. Oh, my mom just... My grandmother raised me because my mom was never around. So we hear this a lot. This is what this life is talking about. It causes psychological trauma and problems later on, of course. Now, why does divorce affect children? What do you think? Why? Why does it bother them if they're living, if they're civil, they're not fighting, they're just living in separate places and they're taking care of the children? What's wrong with that?
They feel guilty for their parents, and they feel like, you know, they caused the problem. And
very good. Very common. Very common that the children will feel that they were the reason for the divorce somehow. Anything else?
So also, like, the man and the wife, each has, like, a specific role.
Mm-hmm.
And if one of them is missing, that balance is skewed.
Exactly. Exactly. Very good. Very good. The same applies to two women and two men raising children as a family. Same thing. You can't just practice or pretend to be the other person. You can't. Even if you have that squeaky voice and you dress like a woman, still, it's not about how you look. It's about how God made you. Mm-hmm. So definitely each one has a role. Children also have that attitude that their parents are super. It's like when exactly Superman. Dad is like the super in the house. And mom is too. They can't imagine that there can be problems. Of course, I'm not talking about the Bible or church part of it. I'm just talking social part of it. They can't imagine that there are some problems that will lead them to separate. They just can't see that. It breaks their picture in the child's mind because the child sees them as like a role model. Also, the children, up until recently, they only know that a family means a father and a mother and children. Of course, now they're trying to change that for the kids and saying, oh, there can be a house with two mommies or two daddies. So, by the time you guys become start teaching Sunday school, of course, I'm sure this topic is going to be very frequent. Now, most common reasons. Now, I'm not saying that these are the only reasons, but these are the most common ones. And you know what? Anything can cause divorce. Seriously. If the two that got married are not willing to work through their problems, anything can cause them to divorce. You'll be surprised if you sit down and listen to the problems that some couples will have. Most, the majority of it, trivial problems. You won't see a family that's like very few. Of course, you will have the cheating sometimes, rather than changing faith sometimes. But the majority will be just trivial stuff, just minute, tiny, little, not important at all things that they just. I don't want to say were unwilling, but they were unable to work through their problems. So these are some of the reasons. Cheating, money, communication is a big one. I would say communication is number one, actually. Commitment, wrong expectations. Commitment here is extremely important because a lot of times people will get bored. That's why they have this notion of girlfriend, boyfriend, because you can just split and no one will lose half, like she wouldn't get 50% of them or nothing, right? It's just she'll go back to her parents and that's it, we're done. So that's why they choose that, because they just can't commit. And these are some other reasons. Now, what are the effects of divorce? These are all health-related effects. It says that people with, for example, cancer, if they are married, chances are they can beat the cancer more than if they are divorced. It says that a person who is divorced will have a health similar to a person who is married and smokes cigarettes. So if you are divorced, that affects your health as if you are smoking, in other words. It affects people really badly. People who are married live longer. I can't count how many people I see in their 70s and 80s, and they're walking and have their head together. They're not demented or anything. And she will come in with her husband, or he will come in and bring his wife. Or, oh, I lost my husband, he died. But they were married for like 50, 60, 70s, pushing it, maybe 50, 60 years. But they were married for a long time. So that takes work. But the person who will talk to you about marriage can talk about this. Yes.
Would the effects of someone, like a death of a spouse, be the same or similar to the divorce?
Definitely not. Definitely not. Because if a person dies, he's not there anymore. He died because of whatever reason, that was his time to go. But in a divorce, you make the decision that you don't want to be with the other person anymore. Just like the difference between death and committing suicide. It's like you choose to, you wanted to, but this just happened. So, no, the effect is not the same.
But a lot of the studies today show that, at least when you're teaching it, they say that on children, the effects of the divorce, the emotional trauma that you're talking about, mm-hmm. it's the same emotional trauma that kids experience if it's for the death of one or more parents. When girls will get depressed, a lot of the times the sons will be like, just go through stages of grief and all, it's like,
yes, of course, it has effects, definitely, but it's not same. When the parents decide that they want to live up separately, it's different from a one parent that's just not there. The kid, yes, will be depressed, he will be angry, he will feel like, why God did you take him? Yes, definitely. It will have definitely effects on the children, but it's very different from a divorce. The divorce is a lot stronger on the kids.
For the two scenarios, one family where, say, the parents are always fighting, always fighting, and the kids are obviously living, versus another family where they get divorced and then potentially maybe like each member like moves on with their lives. Like, what about like if you were to think about the psychology? Yes, they're traumatized in both situations, but like traumatized in peace or traumatized in
Well, it's not really peace if you think about it. Because a lot of times after they separate, they badmouth the other parent. That's one thing. Like you said, they would move on, so they will have their own lives. So the kids won't like that either. That every one of them just put them behind his back or her back and decided to just go on with their lives. So I know, yes, living in a house with a lot of fighting is not healthy either, but an effect of a divorce is so bad.
Wait, what if your spouse like really abusive, like an every day?
Well, I was asked that question 2 years ago when I gave that question. And they said, how come the church does not allow a divorce in that situation? Again, it's against the Bible teaching. There are solutions for this. It's not like a life sentence. We're not here to talk about this. We can make it another topic. But there are solutions for this. And it's healthier for the child, again, if we're focusing about the of the child, the healthier for the child to grow up in a family that's as compared to the whole family. All right?
Can I say something about the topic?
Sometimes God allow things that happen in your life for a reason. How will you get to crown that easily? In marriage, sometimes we have to work very hard to earn the respect of each other. And we have to try to stop talking when the waves are higher than the partner. When your waves are so high on you, closing your mouth sometimes helps a lot until this high wave passes. That's how you earn your crown. And if you take this concept in your life, you can change your partner to God and win him or her. Then keep saying, oh, why I'm in that situation, and keep thinking and having mercy on your spouse and being miserable and why the church doesn't allow me to get divorced. No, that's not the solution. Look through God's eyes, not always looking through your way. Sometimes I'm the one who drives my spouse, or the spouse who always drives me crazy. Why not? Happen. Look at yourself and correct yourself first, and then you can correct the other person.
Once maybe we'll give you a pre-marriage like classes and can talk about all this. Divorce also affects relationships. It doesn't only affect people's health, but divorced parents suffer their relationships with their children, suffer their relationships with others. Friends, the rest of the family, and almost everybody. Now, Now, does it affect on children? They will have sense of being vulnerable, weak because of the loss of the intact family. They will be angry at both parents, by the way, regardless if the mom asked for it or the dad or whatever. You'll be angry at both of them and feeling powerless. Now, Hannah, this one talks about the effect by age. Yeah. So, if you look at it, you find, for example, preschool age 3 to 5. Very easy in that age. That's the way, actually, you can say how they handle stress in that age. So we see regression. What does regression mean?
To go back.
Meaning? They start winning their bets, for example. After they were dry for a long time, they start winning their bets again. They start acting like small children again. They start, for example, crawling, like... So you will see regression in their behaviors. So if your class would be that age group and you see a change in behavior or regression, so that's a sign that this kid is stressed out. And say, oh, don't stop acting like a baby. No, this is not what we expect from you. You want to sit down with the kid and try to figure out what's going on with that. No, no. This is how they handle stress. They want to be cared for. And subconsciously, they know that if they are babies, they will be just cuddled, and they will be carried, and someone will take care of them. So that's the only thing they know of, to just go back.
So like screaming and crying?
Something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Isn't that like that's when they felt the safest in their lives? Like they go back to like the safest point in their lives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that also happen like if a new baby comes in, they're getting less attention. Yeah.
Exactly. Same exact thing happens there because they are stressed out. They feel like it's true. The age of 6 to 8. That's when they start to fantasize. They start just daydream. Oh, they're going to get back together. Everything is going to be fine. Everything is going to be all right. Oh, they're not divorced. They're just like taking vacations from each other. One day they're going to come back. They start to make up these stories in their mind about different scenarios than the ones they appear actually living in.
Mm-hmm.
Similar. Close to. Eight to 11 is when they can express anger. So they can be angry, they can be destructive too. And they start to label parents, oh, this is the good one, this is the bad one, and each parent try to take them to their sides. Of course, yeah. And in that age, 12 to 18 is when they start to express depression, suicide, start using drugs, breaking things in the house, and we start to see all this. But the positive about that age group is, like, for example, if a 12 years old will not be affected as a 17 or an 18. Like, 17 and 18 can, it depends how mature they are, because not all 17 or 18 are the same maturity level, but a good mature 17, 18 year old can actually understand and see that. I'm not saying that this is right, I'm just saying that they won't have as bad of an effect as a 12, 13 years old. Now, the most important part of it. That was introduction. Now, what can you do? Now, we are in a class or whatever in your service, and you are faced with that situation. What can you do?
So, I have a random question.
Sure.
This is off topic, but give me statistics on if the parents were divorced, does it increase the chances of the kids being divorced when they get married?
It's coming. So what can you do? Their parents got separated or divorced, and the kid is not handling it well. What can you do? The first thing we need to do is to assure the children that it's not their fault. Like you said in the beginning, that they feel guilty. They feel that it was them that caused it. So we need to assure them that it wasn't. And also, for young children, drawing is the best. You can do this with young children for anything. So if you have, I want to say, anywhere between 3 years old to, until they stop drawing, maybe fifth grade or even, just have them sitting down, give them a piece of paper, and let's color, let's draw. Just draw whatever comes to mind. And you can look at that drawing, interesting. Not anyone will just look at paper and say, oh, I got it. That's the problem. You can tell from their drawings how they feel and what they are looking at. Once I saw that drawing of a girl, she had a house that had no windows and no doors. And she drew herself far from the house and very tiny. Very little. If you think about it, you can understand a lot that this house is just a closed house. You can't really go in and out. It's not warm. And she's that tiny little thing. Another time, I saw another one. She drew her dad like giant size, and everybody else was just tiny little things. So you can tell from that too, how does she see her dad, and how does she see everybody else. So you can get a lot from just a simple drawing of our children. And of course, the main thing you want to be doing, if you didn't get anything from all that, be positive and supportive. So these are examples of things that you can ask a child to draw. How does divorce look like? What does it make you? How does it make you feel? What does it mean? Just draw a picture of your family. Yeah, I like this one. If God grants you one wish related to your family, what would that be? So that will be interesting to see what the kids are going to draw. And of course, just sitting down and talking. Children usually have a lot of questions. fears and worries, and that's in general, they have a lot of questions. Again, if you're going to be dealing with the younger age, they tend to be more talkative. You just want to feel that you are going to listen. If you don't even listen, they're not going to stop talking. And of course, when they talk, you will see who they are and what's going in their mind. Of course, you can ask them all these questions. What do you think? Why do people get married? Why do people get divorced? What does a happy family look like? What do you worry about? Anything that came out of that divorce that you've been through? All these questions. I don't think it's on the slides, but as part of conversation, sometimes if you go to visit a home and you have the parents, if they give you a chance to, if they bring up the topic of their divorce or something, you can always advise for them not to talk bad about the other parent. It's destructive. Even if the mom was this and this and the dad was this and that, they don't want to talk bad about the other parent. If you don't have anything nice to say, just don't say anything. The golden rule. Just don't say anything. Just be quiet about it. Because that way they're destroying the picture of the other parent.
Is it to prevent the development of hate and anger?
Yes. And they're going to hate both, actually. They're going to hate the victim who is complaining and describing the other person with all this. And they're going to hate the other one, too.
What?
So that's going to and eventually destroy the child. They will have no sense of love or care because they're both bad. And these are like the two big people in their lives.
What would cause hate for the victim?
More of angry. Why are you telling me this? I don't need to know this. Of course, that doesn't come to their conscious, but that's what would be going through their subconscious. Why? I need to know this.
Everybody just has this topic, and then, especially in our church, like if I get involved with one of the kids that his parents are divorced, and I tell them to let's say the kid's mom is always talking bad about the kid's dad. And I go and I'm like, don't talk,
Yeah, but I'm not saying you go and say that. I'm saying if they bring it up, if they do, it becomes the topic that we're talking about, then if you want a bit of piece of advice, if you can, that will be it.
Yeah, no, I feel like if they go...
I'm not saying you go and listen, you've been talking about... No,
yeah.
You don't do that. No, definitely
like
not.
If you go back to like their mom
yeah,
and
no, no,
say,
no, no, no,
say
no, no.
What the servant told you, I feel like it's going to be a war.
No, no, no.
So
you
like
can let Abuna know.
Yeah.
But you don't go in and start
yeah.
preaching. No. Someone else had their hands. Yeah.
I'm going to say, too, let's say if the mother talks to the child about the father, for example.
Mm-hmm.
If the child like respected the father and then like feels like the mom is telling him something and
yeah.
like he thinks to himself like, you know what, like you're lying, you know, you might get like a bad idea at the mother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
What if the child talks negatively about one of his or her parents?
Then we will try to work on that. See where is that coming from. Most probably it's because they heard bad things.
But like
most
how do you
probably.
Stop them? Like what do you say?
Say in general, we try to look at positives in people.
Mm-hmm.
Who are your friends? Start with friends, so you will get the mind off focusing on the dad and say, okay, so what do you like about your friends? It's like, this one is this, this one's that, and they'll start striving good things. Are there bad things about your friends? Oh, yes. Do you want me to start? No, no, no. We want to focus on the good in them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move into their dad. After you get them that frame of mind, then you move into that and start saying, so what do you think is good about your dad? Something must be good about him. And get them to think. That's your homework for the week.
Okay.
To think about something good about your dad. So you start to put them in that frame of mind.
What if the like, bad over the what if there's like more bad?
It's possible if the person is abusive, for example, but there has to be something positive about that person. There has to be. As I said, that can be their homework, and you can help them, maybe ask their older siblings, for example, if they have pictures of they went on vacations in the past. Oh, so daddy cared to take on vacations. Oh, so daddy cared to go to your game. Oh, so daddy did this. So get them to start to think positive, not just for the relationship with their father, but also because, you see, the kid's relationship with their parents affect the relationship with God and any authority figure in the entire life. So if they hate their parents, I can't see them loving God or being able to handle any authorities in their life. So that's why we need to work on this to make it as positive as possible.
Could it be that maybe when they have a good relationship with God, then they'll be able to love them? Because sometimes if the parent was extremely abusive or extremely difficult, then we can't expect a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old to understand that, okay, I have to love because, you know, I will be persecuted, it's like a tribulation. It's difficult for them to go to that level of maturity because they're still young, so all they know is what they see. All they know is what they feel. So maybe when they get older, when their relationship with God is good, maybe then they can learn to love their parents.
Yeah, but you can't wait and see because you never know which direction is going to go. So you need to get on this and start working on it. Now, writing. You said drawing and you said conversation, also writing. Giving them to write how they feel. Blow off steam or kind of, they can write letters. They can write just on index cards, putting information, so writing stories. I believe stories will be the most productive ones that will get the kids to vent and maybe put on paper things that they are not really able to just sit down and talk to you about. And of course, illustration with a story will be all right. Activities. Reading stories about divorce with them. Giving them personal time. Playing games. Going out. Of course, if the girls are dealing with a child that lost a mother, I'm not saying you become a mother, but I'm saying it will be very appreciated if you can give the child some attention. I'm not saying go to the house, visit them every week, but just even the time that you see them in Sunday school, if they don't come, give them a phone call. So how do you feel? Give the child extra attention. Same applies to the guys. If you have a child that lost their father, they will really appreciate a male presence in their lives. Now, making a time capsule. That applies more to if a parent maybe moves out, they get divorced and they're not around. And also it can apply in case of death, that they can make a time capsule. They can put down everything that they want to show that parent whenever they get to see them again. Like their favorite friends, their favorite color, their favorite food, pictures, and anything like that that they want to share with that parent later on in life. This is our last slide. So I would like to, if there are any questions, comments you guys have.
Is there a negative effect if he gets too attached to you and like they don't have a father or a mother, they get too attached to you? There's no problem with that.
Negative effect will be only on you.
Oh.
Because they would want your attention. So it needs to, you want to build it at the same time, you want to be mindful of your limits. you don't want to deprive them of you at all, but at the same time you don't want to be too attached to the family. Anyone else? Questions, comments?
I understand the importance of focusing on kids, but is there any way to affect a child if it's a grown child? Like, we're talking, say your parents have been married for like 30 or 40 years, and you're in your 20s or 30s, and suddenly, you know, you get a phone call one day, oh, we're getting a divorce. How would it affect
you
if you're already grown?
Like we mentioned in one of the previous slides, starting about 17, 18 and up, it does not affect the children as much as when they're still developing. It still has an effect, still gives the feeling of instability, gives the feeling of anger, gives really, you've been together all these years, and now, why didn't you have it a long time ago? Why now? So, shame, guilt, a lot of feelings are attached, but I don't think, just again, my personal opinion, it will be as strong of an effect as it is on a developing child. Anything else? That's it. Thank you. Thank you.